thanks for selling your car to Carvana. Here's your check.
Whoa, when did I get here?
What do you mean?
I swear it was just moments ago that I accepted a great offer from Carvana online. I must have time traveled to the future.
It was just moments ago. We do same day pickup. Here's your check for that great offer.
It is the future.
It's the present and just the convenience of Carvana. Sorry to blow your mind.
It's all good. Happens all the time.
Sell your car the convenient way to
Carvana.
Pickup times may vary and fees may apply.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Dylan Gemelli podcast. So if I was to put the term wealth of knowledge on my guest today, that would be far, far, far too low of a compliment. This man does it all, and I am extremely impressed. He is, well, he's an internal medicine physician. He is a certified health optimization medicine. He's certified for hyperbaric oxygen therapy. He is the Troscriptions COO, and he is the chief medical officer and founder of One Base Health. And there's a lot more that I'm going to let him get into. But my friends, this is Dr. Scott Scher.
Good to see you, Dylan. Thank you for having me.
Welcome, man. I appreciate you taking the time. I told you beforehand how enthralled I was in your work and your videos, and we have a ton to talk about today. So I want to make sure that we utilize the time that I have you. So let's just kind of start with, I'm curious why you chose the route you went. What brought you into all of these things that you're doing? What fascinated you and what got you started? What was your motivational factors?
Well, I have a pretty crazy father is what it comes down to. So he's a chiropractor on Long Island. His name's Dr. Alan Scher. He's been in practice for 45 years and he sees 800 patients per week. So any way you kind of swing that, if you can think of how many hours and how much time, he is a machine of, you know, significant capacity, to say the least. But what I learned from a very young age was that healing didn't happen immediately. Healing happened over time, but there were many things that you could do outside of the box because I didn't even know what conventional medicine was until I was almost going to medical school, to be honest, at least through high school until getting out of the house and going to UCLA for undergrad. So my framework was always one that was very much, there was no real box of what could be, what was possible, what you could do. The various aspects of health were very different for me. And I decided to go to medical school after having conversations with my father when I was younger and also getting more experience, realizing that there's a lot of necessity for conventional medicine too. But understanding that there was this chasm between, at that time, alternative medicine and allopathic or conventional medicine, there was really nothing in between. There's no such thing as integrative medicine, really, when I went to medical school. There's no such thing as functional medicine, or maybe it was just getting started when I went to medical school in 2003 was my first year of medical training. So I decided to go to medical school with the high-minded idea of bridging that chasm, finding a way to kind of learn the conventional realms of medicine, but at the same time, keeping true to my foundation, which was my upbringing. I grew up in my father's office, playing and doing coloring in the front. And then I was at the front desk collecting money when I was in high school and he was giving me cash under the table so I could go out with my friends. This was kind of my life for many, many years, obviously. I was adjusted when I was like a couple hours old. You know, that's kind of the framework that you have to think about for me. And so when I evolved my practice after finishing medical school and residency as an internal medicine physician, it really was under the frame of, well, how can I really truly help people work on their health in a foundational way? And that really evolved over many years through the fields of hyperbaric oxygen therapy to meeting a fantastic mentor that created something called Health Optimization Medicine and Practice, which he had, Dr. Ted Achacosa was his name, which he developed in his own practice and then was bringing here into the United States from Manila in the Philippines, where he was born and had a practice there, along with DC and Europe as well. But it was a nonprofit organization that we incorporated in 2017 to train practitioners on his framework, which became the framework that I use in clinical practice. And so my evolution has sort of been in that realm, which is alternative, conventional, bringing these together, creating my own integrative practice in the image of things that were really interesting to me as I evolved.
That's amazing, man. So everything that you do, it all correlates into one. I mean, because you have so many different things that you do, but it all really comes together as one, basically, in your practice.
Yeah. I mean, for a long time, when I finished my residency and I got more involved in hyperbaric medicine, I found this a fantastic tool, for healing, for accelerating performance, for recovery, but I was missing a foundation to it because I found that if you put people in a chamber too early, if they had chronic issues, that they wouldn't do as well as I anticipated. And I would try to figure out, well, what was going on here? So I would refer over to my friends that were doing functional medicine. And then I was like, well, this is good, but I need to be doing something on my own, something that I could do in my own clinical practice to really be able to support these patients. And that's when I met Dr. Ted, and I met this framework that he was developing that really looked at energy and mitochondria and sort of cellular health first before anything else. And that really was something I gravitated towards because I realized, you know, that's really what I was doing in the chamber, was really trying to push energy production, push the processes of the body to recover and heal. But if you didn't have the machinery to be able to do that, if you didn't have the machinery to be able to optimize the mitochondria to help with energy, to help with detox, to help with blood flow, et cetera, like you weren't going to get as far as you could within a hyperbaric context. And so for me, that was really a big, big turning point for me as I was creating my own practice, was like, I didn't have that foundation. And now, and then I did create that, you know, with the help of Dr. Ted and this framework in 2019 or so, that became a big part of what I do.
Awesome. And this is how I'm going to correlate what you're doing kind of to what I'm doing, because everybody kind of just wants a quick fix all the time and they don't look for the root of the problem first. So everybody that came to you just wanted thrown into that chamber, you could potentially cause them more harm, correct? I mean, if that's not what they need.
Or certainly not help them as much as you could help them, right? So yeah,
and
that's for
sure.
So
a lot of the people that I coach, they just want, they think they're going to take a pill and boom, 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 it's just going to work. And I have to go look at blood work. I have to put them on the right diets. I have to make sure their training's dialed in, or we're just spinning our wheels and we're not getting anywhere. And sometimes we're exacerbating a problem going back. So it's kind of similar to what you're doing.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, because what I find, the more that I've gotten into biohacking and the more that I've gotten to a deeper understanding with the type of doctor you are, as opposed to general practitioners or just regular doctors, the focus is really on cellular health, mitochondrial health. Why is it that the doctors like yourself, that I find to be by far the most intellectual and the more that intrigue me, seem focus on the things that really need to be focused on, as opposed to doctors that just want to, okay, we're going to put you on a statin. Okay, we're going to put you on an NSAID. Okay, we're going to put you on an antidepressant. And they don't look for the core root problem of anything at all. What has kind of popularized that more so lately? And let me ask you this too, and not to make this a two-part question, but do you find that it is, because a lot of things politically or just in general, they get demonized or they kind of try to, you know, dissuade people from going to certain alternative medicine doctors. Do you find that to be a problem for yourself, or do you find that more people are being more accepting of that now?
I think over the years, it's getting bigger and bigger, the number of people that are moving or interested in alternative kind of medical treatments or medical care or outside of the conventional system, because it fails so many people. I think you have to give doctors a little bit of leeway here in the conventional system, because they're just in a system that's very much laid out in a certain way. It's very difficult to do anything inside of that system other than what they already do. And the mitochondria, shocking, are complicated. And it's not something that is that easy for practitioners to really understand without a lot of focus and a lot of work to kind of make sure that you understand what's going on at that level. I mean, in medical school, we learn about the mitochondria. We learn about all the intermediates that are required and how we break down our food and the electron transport chain. But then, like, as soon as you learn it, you have to shove it out of your brain so you can learn something else. I have a good story of, I think it was after my anatomy final, I went to go get money from the ATM when we still did that. And I couldn't remember my PIN code. It was like the same code it had been for like 5 or 10 years at that point, but it was just gone. Like the amount of information that I had to shove into my brain for a short period of time, which I was very good at. But what I didn't learn in medical school was that you could operationalize the capacity to learn mitochondria electron transport chain, the macronutrients, the micronutrients, and be able to actually use that in clinical practice and use it in real time using something called the science of metabolomics, which is the science of the metabolism, the science of understanding what's happening in the real time in your cells right now. The interaction between your genes and your environment, so your internal environment, your DNA, and your external environment is most easily understood at the metabolomic level. This is something that's been around for over 20 years in the science world, in the world of in practice, but it really hasn't hit clinical practice yet, even though it's been around for 20 years. And everybody thinks about the genes and how these are important. Of course, genomics is important, but that only tells you what might happen, right? And then you have things like proteomics and transcriptomics, or you have transcriptomics and then proteomics. Those are other levels outside of your DNA that we can look at various types of proteins or the transcriptome, the RNA, and things like that. But really where the most operational work, the operational capacity and ecosystem is right now is metabolomics. And so medical school didn't teach me that we could do any of these kinds of things with that kind of data, right? We learned about mitochondria, learned about electron transport chain, et cetera, but we didn't learn that you could actually measure it and then actually optimize somebody and then watch things change over time. So that was really kind of really important for me. And I think that a lot of doctors are just so much in the weeds of having to do what they, you know, quote unquote, have to do because of insurance reasons or reimbursement reasons or salary reasons or incentivized reasons. There's lots of incentives in the system to put people on statins, to put people on blood pressure medications, not to wait 6 months and see if they can do things on their own because then they get less bonus at the end of the year and things like that. So the incentives are all fucked up is what it comes down to. And so if you want to find practitioners that are going to help you, oftentimes you're going to have to be paying some sort of money to be able to do that. And that's not easy for everybody. And I get that.
Right. See, I'll be honest with you. Some of the things you're talking about, I didn't know about. I was blessed enough when I was at the Mr. Olympia and then to be invited to speak there. I told you about Dr. Yura through your
Yeah. Yes.
I told her, I sat with her and I talked with her quite an extensive amount of time. And I said, I didn't know people like you even existed at all.
Yeah.
You know, in my area, I'm talking about underground stuff. I'm talking about steroids. I'm talking about peptides. I'm talking about SARMs way before anybody, any practitioners or anybody even knew about them. But I didn't know until, you know, 2020, 2021 that they were even being prescribed. And then when I saw like the alternative medicine doctors, now I'm going to an IHPI to get certified and work on this myself because of the fascination level. And I want to be on the same level as, obviously I won't be on your level intellectually, but to start to understand more, to look at different aspects like we're talking about here. How did you decide, man, this is like, I'm missing all of this. I didn't learn this. This is what I want to do. And how did you make this work the way that you do? Because it's what you know, especially if it wasn't taught to you younger. First of all, it's harder to learn stuff when you get a little bit older. And secondly, I mean, you have so much knowledge on this. How do you do all of this and make it all work?
It was very simple for me. It was realizing that using hyperbaric oxygen therapy as a modality, as the main modality, which I became known for over many years, speaking about it, doing it, like I was a medical director of multiple facilities in the Bay Area, realizing people weren't doing as well as I anticipated, as we were alluding to earlier, I realized that the issue was that when you're in a hyperbaric chamber, in essence, what we're doing is bringing a huge amount of more oxygen in circulation. We're doing that with an increased atmospheric pressure. We're doing that with increased inspired oxygen. However, if you're going to bring all this oxygen in circulation, can the body do what you want it to do with all of that oxygen, i.e. make energy, i.e. have the capacity to shift some of your, what's called your epigenetics, somehow the ways that your DNA is being expressed, various ways of genes expression, that can change over time, and oxygen can be an inciter of that. But if you don't have the capacity to make energy well, or you don't have the capacity to detoxify from the energy that you make, because every time we make energy, it comes at a cost. And our cells have waste products that we make after we make energy, or ATP. This is, so you have, you make water, you make carbon dioxide, and you make these things called reactive oxygen species or free radicals or oxidative stress. And some of these molecules, these are signaling molecules at small doses, but at high doses, they can be stressful to the system. But the body keeps them in a very fine balance with having a balancing effect with something called an antioxidant, which all of us have heard of before. So our body has antioxidants in the system that helps neutralize oxidative stress or these reactive oxygen species. So if you're going into a hyperbaric chamber, you're going to flood the body with more oxygen. You're going to make more energy. Can you do that? Number one, do you have the vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and the machinery to be able to do that, that's number one. That's a lot of number ones, a lot of things in that. And number two is, once you make all that energy, do you have the capacity to detoxify from that? Do you have the ability to create a neutralization effect so that all that oxidative load that you've created because of all the energy that you made is going to be neutralized? And I found out very quickly after I started doing this work and meeting Dr. Ted in 2017 and starting working on testing oxidative stress levels, testing for antioxidants, testing for inflammation, testing for vitamin mineral nutrient deficiencies using metabolomic testing, that many of my patients, especially those that had chronic inflammatory disorders, chronic inflammatory issues, that they had autoimmune issues, they had infections that wouldn't go away for long periods of time, they had dementia, they had Parkinson's, they had any number of chronic issues that you can imagine, they all had issues where they were not doing well, either making energy or detoxing, and likely both. So if I found this to be the case, which was often, and I optimized, and I still do this.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Practice levels of vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and cofactors that are responsible for making energy. And then I optimize antioxidant capacity so that you have the ability to neutralize the stress of making all that energy, which is really important. That's how hyperbaric therapy is working, right? But you need that, but you don't want to completely destroy the system and just overload the system, not destroy, but overload the system with so much oxidative stress that the body can't tolerate it. So like, yeah, I'll give you an example. Like somebody would go into a hyperbaric chamber and they couldn't walk for 3 days after going in, right? They had like severe muscle pain, they had abdominal discomfort, they had headaches. Like these are called like, it's like a detoxification kind of reaction. And I saw this happen often when I first started doing hyperbaric medicine, when I would have people coming in for like things like Lyme disease, for example. Like Lyme is a pretty substantial, I mean, if you believe on it, and it's not always, not everybody believes in chronic Lyme disease, but, and I have actually mixed opinions about everybody that says they have chronic Lyme, but in general, chronic Lyme, going to a hyperbaric chamber, if you're not 60 or 70% better already, you're not going to do well in the chamber, just my experience. And that's kind of across the board for me, is that if you have a chronic complex medical issue, you need to be about 60 or 70% better overall to really significantly benefit from being in the chamber. And that 60 or 70% benefit is really in the sense that you're making energy better, you're detoxing better from the energy you make. That's like, that's it. So when I got involved in with Dr. Ted and our nonprofit, it was because I realized that there was a significant deficiency in what I was doing to support my patients. And this was the foundation that I was able to lay and now have in clinical practice, where I work with people that don't even go into hyperbaric chambers anymore and then just do the foundational work with me, because that is the main thing. And that's like, I always talk about now how hyperbaric therapy is kind of my smokescreen, because if you were coming to see me, Dylan, you're like, hey, Dr. Scott, I have migraines and you wanted to consult with me, we would spend 30 minutes or an hour speaking about that, and 90% of what I spoke to you about would have nothing to do with hyperbaric therapy at all. It would be about foundational principles, which are part of our nonprofit, like your metabolomics, your chronobiology, you know, your circadian rhythms, right? Your gut, your toxic exposure, you know, et cetera. We have 7 pillars in total. And so that's what I'd be spending most of my time doing with you. And then at the end of it, I'd be like, well, hyperbaric therapy could be helpful, but let's do all of this stuff first within the framework that this really fits in for the long term, right? Because we want all long-term benefit. And the other thing I found in hyperbaric medicine was that if you didn't work on this foundation first, the benefits may not be as awesome initially, but certainly long-term, you would not see the benefits that you would otherwise see if you worked on the foundation first.
Love that. And anybody listening, and if it's too much too quick, basically it's like, essentially saying, get yourself ready first before you go and do something. This is what I run into with a lot of people that I, once again, I'm going to relate it to some of my audience. The people that get upset with me that they want to run X, Y, and Z compound. And I say, look, you're not ready to run it yet. You're not in the right condition. You're not the right age. I mean, there's certain things that go along with it. And it's just the same thing that Dr. Scott is saying. If you're not ready for it yet, it's not going to be beneficial for you, or you're not going to get what you need out of it. Just so everyone understands. It's the same thing.
Yeah, you want to be able to walk before you run. I mean, I had one child that's my, I have four kids. My third daughter was trying to run after her two sisters before she could walk. That was not going well for her, right? She would fall a lot. So as an example, okay? And so, but I mean, there are tools and techniques and things that you can use, though, that might be helpful in the short term. And so Home Hope, or Health Optimization Medicine in Practice, the nonprofit, developed a for-profit company called Truescriptions, which is a company that helps like people right now while they're on the longer path to optimizing their health. Because again, walk before you run, but how can you walk if you're just in bed and you can't move, right? So, and then in that case, like the path to health optimization is one that can be very challenging for people. And it doesn't happen overnight. It can happen 6 months, a year. Some people that I've worked with has taken 3 or 4 years. And part of that's compliance for sure. But part of it is just that people are pretty messed up sometimes. And it's not their fault oftentimes. Like people don't know what they're doing is bad for them until they hit some sort of threshold and they just get pounded in the ground and like they can't move. And this happened like so many people that, you know, some of my friends and colleagues, even in the medical space, but definitely my patients that I work with over the years. And so that's where some of our products came into play. Like how can you use something like methylene blue, for example, which is a fantastic mitochondrial optimizer while somebody's getting better and optimizing that energy production, that vitamin, mineral, nutrient, cofactor, antioxidant, blah, blah. Like you can do all that. That takes time, but you can use things like methylene blue, for example, like working on the GABAergic system and other, which is a system that helps relax our nervous system. Because if we're always stressed all the time, by the way, if you're always stressed, you can't heal. You also can't build muscle. You can't recover. And so we worked on these various sort of, you know, targeted aspects of health, targeted aspects of these pain points for people that would able to kind of bring them over the humps and be able to keep on the process of health optimization. And then I can use hyperbaric therapy in that context too, but only really in that context, unless, and this is the caveat, is that if you have an acute issue, hyperbaric therapy is fantastic, right? If you have an acute trauma, acute inflammation, like a surgery, like it's going to work really fast with your body to make you feel better and more efficiently heal. No doubt about it, like 30 to 70% faster. But if it's a chronic issue, then this is where this framework really is the most important for me.
So let's just say somebody's got like tennis elbow or some kind of arthritis or some kind of nagging injury. Would the hyperbaric chamber be ideal for them? Would that be helpful, or would that kind of be something that you would go another route with?
Well, it depends. Like tennis elbow, that's something that's relatively acute. Then the hyperbaric therapy could be very helpful for that. If it's more of like a hip osteoarthritis or a knee osteoarthritis, I have seen hyperbaric therapy. I remember this one patient of mine. She was probably 87 and she was in great health, but she had really bad knees. And there's not a lot of data that hyperbaric therapy for arthritis can be very effective, but there is an inflammatory component. Let's try it, right? And so she just did like 3 hyperbaric sessions. She felt like a new lady and she felt fantastic. And I didn't see her again for a year when she came back, when her symptoms came back. But like, and she's like, my knee pain's back and I come back for 3 treatments, which is very unusual. Usually if you have like a chronic issue, it's going to take you much more hyperbaric therapy to see the benefit. But she was one of these hyper responders that I wish we could study. But she just did 3 hyperbaric sessions and her arthritis was gone. Now, in general, though, if it's a chronic issue, if it's a chronic, like for example, mild cognitive impairment, dementia, like these are not things that happened overnight, right? There's a lot of things that are going on there. So you're looking at much more hyperbaric therapy to see the benefit in general than just a couple treatments here or there, and a much more comprehensive approach like we've been talking about here, like with the foundation that we have, you know, the health optimization medicine framework is certainly one framework. It's a very different than functional medicine because, you know, functional medicine is looking more for the root causes of illness, where we're looking at the root causes of health and creating the first standard of care for health and not disease. And so our focus is, how can you keep people healthy? How can you optimize your levels of vitamins, minerals, and nutrients and cofactors, the things that help you make energy that I was mentioning earlier? Can you optimize these to the levels when you were between 21 and 30 years of age? Not just optimizing it for your normal for your age. The problem with a lot of laboratory tests out there, as you likely know, Dylan, is what's a normal range anyway? Like, do you want to be normal for a 50-year-old or normal for a 75-year-old? Probably not. You probably want to be normal for somebody between 21 and 30. That's when you're at the most optimized levels of hormones and to be able to be the most resilient and the most ability to procreate, et cetera. Like that's when we want to be the most. That's where we want to stay. And that's what we do at Health Optimization Medicine. That's different than you know, functional medicine or other types of alternative medicines out there. But they're all able to be used in conjunction with each other. So I don't want to say that this takes the place of those. This is just a foundation I feel like that's missing in even conventional alternative, all the health space.
It's tough too, because like Quest will have a different range, LabCorp will have a different, all these different have different ranges. And then over time, one of the things that I find to be extremely disturbing is, well, twofold. One, the acceptance of testosterone levels declining, and that being acceptable. And who,
the new normal. Yeah.
It is not normal at all. Telling people that, it really makes me pissed to no extent, because I know, because I've been studying it for 15 years, you know, what a good range is and what's not, and this decline, and then not addressing what's causing the declines. You know, I mean, that's a different topic for a different day, but it's still relatable in what you're saying.
Totally. Yeah, it's very challenging.
So this is kind of one of those things that I have found to be difficult to assess, and I'm wondering how hyperbaric would work with that. And that would be something like a fibromyalgia condition, because I know how out there that condition really is. And to me, it's hard to even comprehend and understand, because it varies from person to person. Is that something that may be too much for that kind of treatment? Or do you find people finding help with that too, that have that condition? Or do you even mess with it?
So twofold. The first to say is that there is some pretty good data that fibromyalgia can respond to hyperbaric therapy. In fact, there were some pretty good studies done out of Israel that described fibromyalgia post-traumatic brain injury, that these are like severe concussions or mild, actually moderate to severe concussions, I think that were in the study. So, or maybe mild to moderate concussion. But regardless, so these patients with concussions who developed fibromyalgia were given hyperbaric therapy, were treated with hyperbaric therapy for 40 sessions, which is a common protocol for more of a chronic issue, and their fibromyalgia symptoms went away. Okay. So, and probably this was because they were healing up the brain injury that was kind of the impetus or the nidus for their fibromyalgia. Okay. That's a bit of a unique case. And there also is another study done at using hyperbaric therapy for fibromyalgia. But the challenge I have found over the years is that fibromyalgia is basically it's like the common denominator diagnosis for a lot of other things that are going on. And so if you just use hyperbaric therapy for fibromyalgia, you may see benefit sometimes, but I can promise you the majority of those patients are going to have those symptoms recur over time. If what was going on that was the impetus for the fibromyalgia was not also addressed most of the time. This means what's going on cellularly, what's going on in the gut, what's going on hormonally, what's going on otherwise to sort of create this myalgic encephalitis or fibromyalgia as it used to be called. And if you can work on brain inflammation, if you can work on the gut, if you can work on vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and cofactors at the same time as optimizing in a hyperbaric chamber, that's when I see the most power. So if, for example, somebody like you, Dylan, said, hey, Dr. Scott, I really want to use hyperbaric therapy for fibromyalgia, I'd be like, the first question be, I would ask them, are you working with an integrative provider that's helping you underneath the conventional model understand why you may be having this symptomatology? If the answer is no, then it's absolutely do not go into hyperbaric chamber right now, because we ought to wait 3 to 6 months, have you find an integrative provider, you know, work with me, work with somebody else that can at least help you understand more what's going on under the hood. Have you changed your diet? Have you changed your behaviors? Are you still eating McDonald's, drinking alcohol? Are you still going to the gym and you can't do that because whatever, right? Like whatever it might be. The key for me is to understand where people are, you know, in that sense. But because what a lot of people, even the researchers in the hyperbaric field will tell you is that we don't study people after we finish their hyperbaric protocol. We don't know how they do afterwards, right? This is, and the classic one here is my friends in Israel who did a great, great study on longevity, looking at how hyperbaric therapy can be a potential longevity tool, decreasing the telomeric age, decreasing the number of senescent cells in the body, which are zombie cells, which are these cells that, you know, build up as we get older. They're these cells in our body that cause degeneration. They can cause risk of cancer, risk of inflammatory diseases, autoimmune problems, and things like that. What hyperbaric therapy can do is decrease the number of those cells. Great. Fantastic. But after a hyperbaric protocol, how long does that last?
Yeah.
Nobody knows. And so what was cool about that study is that they didn't change diet. They didn't change any lifestyle. They didn't change any behavior. Well, they can't for a study because those are other things that they would be changing, and that gets confounding and all these other things with studies. But in general, that was very exciting to me. That study was like, well, if they were able to show that they were able to do this without changing anything else, what could we do if we did change all those other things too, or optimize them? So in essence, your question on fibromyalgia is a fantastic one, because it's either most of the time, it's going to be, if you're not working with an integrated provider and working on foundational health metrics, then it's not the time to go into hyperbaric chamber if you want long-term benefit.
I'm thinking one more condition too. I'm curious because I wanted to bring this up to you now though, because we're talking about more of an oxygen type therapy. I did a paper. Now, granted, the internet was fairly new. This was in 2001. I was in college and I did a paper on oxygen therapy, and I was looking at trying to cure disease. Like, so for instance, we were looking at herpes simplex because the oxygen was able to smother it and kill it off. And they did this in Germany, and I found it and I wrote a whole paper on it. To this day, I remember it. And so I was fascinated. And then I started partying, playing basketball in college, and didn't get back into all of this stuff and got distracted. But I was so fascinated by that. Is that something that is a possibility in terms of curing so-called, you know, viruses that need suppressive therapy as opposed to, is that a possibility with something like this where you could potentially smother the disease with oxygen and kill it off? Or was that just nonsensical and nothing that you would find to be accurate at all?
Well, the way I would say it is this: what hyperbaric therapy is able to do is improve immune system function, improve the immune system and the ability of the immune system to suppress infection as a result of having a more optimized immune system is absolutely the case. And we've seen this before, and it's pretty well studied in the sense that this kind of goes to the conversation of these chronic viral syndromes, chronic Lyme even, and things like that, where if you can improve the immune system itself, you can often see the body kind of take care of itself in the sense that, like, oftentimes, like, you're never going to have this virus completely go away. Like, if it's an HSV virus, if it's a herpes zoster, or if it's a varicella virus, et cetera, these things stay in our nervous systems, and they are, once we're infected with them, they're not going to go away completely. The cure is a very difficult word here, but can your immune system fully suppress these and make them that so they're inactive? The answer is absolutely, right? And so once the immune system takes a hit, that's when you see the viral reactivations happening of HSV and EBV, and you have the zoster, and you have even Lyme that wasn't an issue before causing an issue because the immune system got so trounced. And this became a really big issue, and it still is now, because of severe COVID infections across the world and, you know, for the 3 or 4 years that was happening, because that was a huge immune system hit for so many people that they had this sort of suddenly they had mold, suddenly they had Lyme. A lot of this had to do with a leaky gut and a leaky brain that happened because of the inflammation, and things that were kind of walled off or being suppressed by the immune system were not unable to be walled off and suppressed any further. And so addressing the foundation of all this stuff is going back to working on the immune system, working on the gut, where, you know, 80% of our immune system lives anyway. So that if you're working on the gut, you're working on 80% of your immune system right there. So the gut is a primary target here when we're talking about immune system optimization. And so that's kind of where I would be thinking about going. And that's kind of my sense here, is that if you're optimizing immune system function, you're going to optimize for viral reactivations. You're going to be preventing viral reactivations, or you're going to be suppressing viral load if you improve immune system function. And hyperbaric therapy can be a helpful tool here, right? It can be a helpful tool to do that. It decreases inflammation in the system. It can help optimize the immune system if you have all the machinery and capacity to be able to do that. And again, that's how I always like to remind people that you need to have that machinery. Otherwise, you're not going to see the benefit as much in the hyperbaric chamber.
I'm not sure if you do any of this, write prescriptions for this at all, but theoretically, I'm just thinking in my head, would a combination of like BPC-157 with the hyperbaric chamber, would that be a good combination for healing? And do you do anything like that, or have you seen anything like that?
Yeah, we do it. There's a lot of my colleagues and I that will use various peptides, various other wound healing or mitochondrial optimization peptides or compounds. And this is where I use a ton of methylene blue specifically, because, you know, methylene blue is working in the mitochondria, the part of our cells that make energy. And if you have some support to mitochondrial function, then they can start regenerating themselves and they can start having the whole system shift from an inflammatory immune system going crazy state to anti-inflammatory immune system modulation state, where things are more able to be controlled by our immune system because our mitochondria are working better. So I use a lot of methylene blue in this capacity to decrease inflammation, improve energy production. This is where we have a bunch of Triscriptions products, as you know, that have methylene blue in them. We have another type of product called that's based off the cordyceps mushroom. that's called the active ingredient in that is something called cordycepin, which is highly potent. We use it because it works on the adenosine system. Adenosine is the system that helps you make energy, but also helps you feel sleepy. So it increases your deep sleep when you take high doses of cordycepin at night. But also it's a profound anti-inflammatory. So it works on things like mTOR and the NF-kappa B pathways and AMPK and things like that, that helps modulate the immune system that way. So as we were kind of alluding to all here is that many people have been sick for a long time and want to feel better, like you said, Dylan, right away with a pill or a potion or an exercise or whatever that's going to make them be able to do. But it's very difficult. It takes time. And so, and while you're kind of working on that foundation, having tools and techniques, it really can be very helpful. Something like methylene blue can be very helpful. Cordycepin can be very helpful, working on the GABA system. So I do all these things. And then it's about stacking, like that, like the biohacking kind of thing, but stacking in a methodical relationship. So it's not like, here's everything one on day one. Like, no, like, let's see how you do for a couple of weeks or a couple of months doing X, then add Y, then add Z, or, you know, start at A and add to Z if you need to. But it's about a stepwise, intentional way of working with people and not just throwing shit at the wall, unless you absolutely need to, if it's like an acute issue. But in general, let's not throw shit at the wall. Let's be more methodical about things.
Yes, I love that. So, and I did this myself. I found out about something genetic with my heart, with my LP little A, and then I threw every fucking thing I possibly could at it. And while I got that number to drop drastically, it was like Rob Peter to pay Paul. My liver value shot up. My kidney value shot up because I was doing way too much shit. And that's why it's like what you said, test a little bit, see how it goes, then move forward and keep going. So I love that because a lot of us have the tendency to just panic and just want to throw the kitchen sink at it. Not good.
Yeah, well, we have a different term here. Health Optimization Medicine and Practice is the nonprofit or Home Hope. And Dr. Ted had created this word called, well, I think that the background here is there's something called the holobiont. Have you heard of the holobiont before?
No.
So the holobiont is it's a cool word. It basically means that we are a holo organism in ourselves. Like we're not just made up of human cells. We're made up of bacteria, virus, fungus, and we're made up of the food and the light and the environment and the toxicity and the everything else is all us. Like we're not just human, right? In fact, we're outnumbered. In fact, with all the other types of cells that are in us, the trillions of bacteria, fungus, and virus, right? So this holo organism is us. So we're not, I'm not you, you're not me. We're all different. So we're not individuals just in a population and ecosystem of like outside in the world, but like around us, we have like our, you know, our aura of everything happening inside. So we can test all this using metabolomics, but the word holobiont is what we're testing here. We're testing the exogenous things outside the environment, endogenous, the things that are happening inside the environment. And so we call this is a study of holobiontology. And instead of being biohackers, as you know, many people say they are, in our world, we're biont hackers, B-I-O-N-T hackers, holobiont hackers, because we're hacking our own biology using a intentional framework called metabolomics to look at all these pillars of health optimization, medicine, and practice in a holistic way. So that is the difference, right? So we're not just throwing shit at the wall and seeing what like cool supplement or cool technology or look at the squirrel, look at there. We're like, no, this is an intentional framework. It's a framework that every biohacker should use, honestly, is that we have, it's called the holobiont hacking framework or biont hacking, as we say.
Love it. Okay, so here's what I would like you to do, if you would, please. Would you give like just a short little synopsis or breakdown of like in the simplest terms for everybody watching, what the gist of metabolomics is, because I am so fascinated. Like when we get done with this, I want you to give me whatever you've got so I can sit down and just enthrall myself in it. But for everybody watching, just a quick little synopsis of what that is, because the way that you have presented this importance of it is just, it is insanely high. So I want a great understanding of what it is.
There was a paper that was published in like 2013, 2014 that called metabolomics the stethoscope of the 21st century. So really? Just to kind of give you some gravitas of what we're saying here.
Yeah.
In essence, in simplistic terms, metabolomics is real time what's happening in your cells. It's the interaction between the environment outside of you and the internal environment, as well as your cells and your genes, all at the same time, what's happening real time. So vitamins, minerals, nutrients, and cofactors, how they're working on energy metabolism, how well you're breaking down your macronutrients, how well you're optimizing your micronutrients. These are all things that you can measure at the metabolomic level, whether you're measuring them directly or you're measuring the products of their metabolism or their breakdown or their processing inside the cell. And so the testing that we use a lot that many people may have heard of, well, some people may have heard, is organic acid testing. Organic acid testing is usually a urine-based test that's looking at these kinds of markers, okay? And so the power of this is that it's the interaction between external and internal environments. The way we think about this at Home Hope is that you have your exogenous metabolites, like your food, your microbes, your cosmetics, your drugs, your sunlight, your water, your magnetism, and you have your endogenous metabolites that are coming from your nucleus, your cytoplasm, your mitochondria, your hormones, your neurotransmitters, and your microorganisms, your microbiota as well. So all of those things are coming together, and we can measure them all at the metabolomic level and then make real-time assessments that are clinically actionable, which means we can do something about them right now and see how that shifts over time as we make these various interventions. You know, Dr. Ted, who the founder here, likes to say, like, we don't deal in theoreticals. Like, I don't want to deal in theoreticals. We want to deal, like, what the fuck can you do with somebody right now? They're right in front of you. How are you going to help them right now? As opposed to what may happen in 30 years if they have an ApoE allele or LP little a. That's all important, but it's not as important in our estimation as what's happening right now. The other stuff you can fill in, your genetics, if you're getting really cool, you can get your transcriptomics involved, your proteomics. Like, there's something called the narcissome, which is actually a term that was developed out of Stanford, which is basically, as humans, at some point, we're going to have what's called our narcissome, which is our DNA transcribed, our proteins, our transcriptome. We're going to have it all. We have epigenetics, we'll have it all, and then we'll be able to, like, have it all on our wrist, and we can, like, look at it, and we can make real-time assessments and metabolomics as well. But, you know, for now, what we can use that's clinically actionable right now is metabolomics, and we can use vitamins, minerals, and nutrients and supplementation and change diet and change our lifestyle and behaviors and get out of shitty relationships and sleep in a different room if your wife snores or whatever. You're going to see the effects of that looking at metabolomic testing over time.
Wow. Dude, I wish you knew how much I love that you said you don't deal with theoreticals. If I had, I would be a multi fucking millionaire if you knew how many times that I had to say that to people. This is why I'm so thrilled to be talking to somebody like you and the people that I've been around, because all of these guys, and I stress over and over, I don't care how you feel, because how you feel could be a symptom of XYZ. I mean, all the way up and down. I want to see exactly your blood panel. So for instance, I'll get these guys, well, I think my estrogen's high, so I'm going to blast the anastrozole and do this. And I'm like, dude, you could have symptoms of this, 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 or this. You do that, you crush your estrogen, and you're screwed. And you're exacerbating a problem, creating a new one. So, if you only do, I've been doing this for like 13 years with the same thing over and over and over again. And just for anybody listening, please understand that guesswork and theory, it doesn't pan out. You have to have accurate numbers and assessments done. Otherwise, you could be treating the wrong problem and creating a new one or making the present problem worse. So,
I agree. Yeah.
Thank you very much for that. Okay. I've got another, and I will link some information in our video, like where to look up some of this stuff and where to follow you and everything, because this is some intense stuff that I think people are going to want to read and look into. I want to talk to you about something else that you and I talked about this I'm curious about that I think it'll be beneficial to everybody, and that was mitochondrial optimization. Could you kind of tell me what that is and how you, like how that applies to what you do?
Mitochondrial optimization is a very, very, very important piece, if not the foundational piece to what I do, because it dovetails the work I do in hyperbaric medicine. It's the foundation of the metabolomic work that we do in clinical practice as Home Hope practitioners. And it has a significant amount to do with what we're doing at our for-profit company, Transcriptions, to try to help people, because 94% of the U.S. population has mitochondria that doesn't work as optimally as it could. And that's 6%. Are metabolically healthy. And so maybe some people have heard of that term, like metabolically healthy. What does that mean? What metabolically healthy really means is that you're able to take those macronutrients and make energy from them, and then also detox from the energy that you make. So the stuff we've been talking about here. So if you're not able to do any of those things optimally, then you have some element of mitochondrial dysfunction. So where do we have our most mitochondria? Dylan, this is a quiz question for you. Where do we have our most mitochondria per cell? Do you know?
Yes.
Your gut.
Your gut has a lot, but there are more places. So number one place for men is in their sperm. Number one place for women is going to be in their ovaries and their eggs. And then after that, we have our brain, our heart, and our liver. And then our musculoskeletal system, of course. So if you have brain fog, if you have concentration problems, if you have chronic fatigue, if you have exercise-induced fatigue, if you have detoxification issues, cardiac issues, these all are mitochondrial issues. If you are having a hard time getting pregnant, if you're female, or if you're hard time, you know, inseminating a female because you are have sperm that don't work very well because your mitochondria there are not working well. So infertility, you mentioned this earlier with testosterone levels. This is also a mitochondrial issue significantly as well. However, in essence, if your mitochondria aren't working well, your cells aren't going to work well. And then there's all these cascades of things that happen as a result of that. So if you are looking at it from a gut perspective, which you mentioned, our gut microbiota, our bacteria in our gut are communicating with the mitochondria in our cells as well through these things called extracellular vesicles as well. And this is called interkingdom crosstalk. So, which means that our bacteria are communicating with these mitochondria in our cells to tell them what's going on and how to interact and how to work with the immune system and how to change DNA expression. And like, it's a very complicated system. So, but the lowest or the main common denominator here for most disease is mitochondrial dysfunction. So that doesn't mean that's the only thing you want to address. But oftentimes, if you think about what's causing mitochondrial dysfunction, it's the most common thing right now in the world, but especially in the US, is insulin resistance. So people that are obese and overweight, if you're insulin resistant, you have a higher risk of having metabolic dysfunction and then mitochondrial dysfunction. If you take medications that affect mitochondrial function as well, the most common one that's commonly used in longevity actually is metformin. Metformin actually destroys the first of the four major complexes that run the mitochondria themselves. The idea is to destroy it and then you can make new ones that are better. That's the idea with metformin, at least. It may work in diabetics, but probably not for everybody. So medications, there are toxins in our environment, so infections, these are all things that can affect our mitochondria. So why is it so important? Because it's the final common denominator for almost all disease that we have. Now you have to think about addressing all those other aspects of what's causing mitochondrial dysfunction. But if you're looking at the mitochondria and you're testing for it, then you can start optimizing for vitamins, minerals, nutrients, for cofactors, start using things that can help regenerate or restore mitochondrial function while you're trying to work on the behavior, the lifestyle, the diet. Those are aspects of other things that have been affecting the mitochondria so much as well.
So what are the keys then to fixing? Is it all like kind of diet nutrient related? And then second part of that question, is there like any type of extra medication, supplement, or anything that you can take to also add to helping to improve that?
Yeah, I mean, oftentimes it depends on sort of the reason, like what's going on to cause the mitochondrial dysfunction. But that's not, so you, it's like being exposed to a heavy metal. If you have heavy metals in the system, you need to detox from those and have various pathways to kind of upregulate to do that. But you also have to take away the exposure at the same time. So you can't do one without the other. Now, you can start the detox process with heavy metals. You can start the process of mitochondrial optimization without understanding exactly what those toxins or those other issues are. And you can get some of the way there, but eventually you have to be thinking about, you know, behavior, lifestyle, diet, as well as, you know, optimizing the mitochondria from the inside out. But it can take a lot of time to do this. It's not like you can just start working with somebody and you can see their mitochondria just regenerate over a couple of days. And so there are things you can use in the short term to help. And you know, one of the things that I've mentioned a couple of times is something called methylene blue, which is a synthetic dye, which is invented over 100 years ago, which initially was used at high doses for infection. It's a fantastic anti-infective, but at low doses, it supports mitochondrial function. It supports the capacity to compensate for defects and for deficiencies in the what's called the electron transport chain, which is the chain of proteins that's on your mitochondria that allows you to make energy. And for many people, that is what's wrong. You're having a hard time, especially with the first two complexes that are taking electrons from your food. I mean, most people like to eat, but the reason why we have these mechanisms that tell us that we like to eat is because we need food to make electrons. That's what we need the food for, at least especially for fat and for carbohydrates. For protein, it's for lots of other things, but in essence, not as much for this. But from a perspective of making energy, we need electrons from our food to be able to do that. And so we have this electron transport chain in a mitochondria that has this whole process in play to create all of that energy so that we can make that energy currency to run all the processes that we want. And for so many of us, there is a problem with that. And if you have a problem with that, you likely know it. If you have brain fog, if you have infertility, if you have cardiac or detoxification issues, if you have muscle, if you have exercise-induced fatigue, these are mitochondrial issues. And so you can use something like methylene blue, which happens, you can get inside the system very quickly, and you can start seeing benefit very, very fast. Energy better, inflammation better, brain fog better, exercise-induced fatigue better, while you're doing the other work of optimizing, you know, behavior, lifestyle, diet, along with doing the testing and seeing where you can work in the system itself to kind of target and to support, you know, the mitochondrial energy production system, detoxification system, et cetera.
So is it to test and find out if you have issues there, is it like a blood test or what is the testing that you do?
Yeah. So there's a couple different tests. The one that I typically use is the organic acid testing, which is urine-based. There are a couple tests out there that purportedly can give you a sense of mitochondrial health, but those tests are pretty new. I don't, you know, Dr. Yurth and I have actually had discussions about this. Dr. Elizabeth Yurth, we don't believe some of the other testing out there. It may be kind of like the Oura Ring where you can watch things over time and see things change. But even that, I'm not even sure about. I mean, we just don't know yet. There's something called the MitoSwab, for example, that may be good, but I just don't have enough personal experience with it. And I know Dr. Yurth was feeling the same way when I asked her about this not too long ago. So there's a couple other ways to do mitochondrial testing, but they're pretty invasive. You can get like a punch biopsy. You can get like a biopsy of muscle and look at mitochondrial function. There's also this really cool machine out of Belgium that does mitochondrial testing, but it's very, very expensive. Actually, a really cool like side note there is that the guy that invented it, the demonstration that he makes is he has it hooked up to him in an area of his skin, and then he rubs cyanide cream, just like very like 1% cyanide.
Yeah.
And what you can see happen is that the electron transport chain, the mitochondria, goes down to zero because cyanide is a mitochondrial poison. And right. So actually, what is the antidote for cyanide poisoning is actually methylene blue, because it can rescue rescue the mitochondria and prevent you from dying from cyanide. So if you're going anywhere that, you know, any that you might get cyanide poisoned, you should always have methylene blue with you. And that's for sure. But I hope nobody listening has that particular adventure ahead of them. But in essence, the way they were able to prove that you're actually looking at mitochondrial ATP production and the utilization of oxygen by showing that you can use cyanide on the skin and see how their oxygen, their energy capacity, their energy production capacity goes to zero. Pretty cool, actually. But I would try that at home, ladies and gentlemen. So
I just typed that in my notes, the organic acid testing. Where does one get that done at then?
There's a couple labs that do it. The one that we use typically is Genova Diagnostics.
Okay.
Genova's based out of North Carolina. There's another lab called Great Plains. There's another one called Vibrant. There's a number of companies out there that do them. The nice thing about Genova is that they do optimal ranges, which is that their normal levels of their labs are standardized in a healthy group of individuals between 21 and 30 years of age, as opposed to Vibrant and others that use a much larger age range, usually 18 to 65 is what they use. And so that's okay, but it's not necessarily optimal as far as I'm concerned. But you know, there's also some new companies out there like Fullscript, for example, that are creating their own optimal ranges with their new system, which I'm pretty excited about. So your Fullscript is a supplement aggregator online that many people know about already. So they're pretty cool and how they're doing. And then even our nonprofit, Home Hope, we're doing a number of things in the world of AI to help us, not just fake AI, but real AI. Not everybody says AI, but Dr. Ted is actually one of like the true pioneers of AI back in the 1980s. He was actually able to fully what is it, transcribe, or the worm C. elegans. He was able to compute the nervous system of C. elegans back in the 90s and create a mathematical model of consciousness that way. So anyway, but just to give you a sense, we're also doing things internally to work on these kinds of systems too.
So is there a certain kind of age range that we see mitochondrial issues, or is it variable? I guess my assumption would be it would be as you get a little older, but I don't know. Is it something that's prevalent in all ages?
Definitely gets more prevalent as we get older.
Okay. All right. So when would you recommend somebody maybe look into getting that tested? What age do you recommend?
I mean, I usually say if you're healthy and otherwise doing well, somewhere in your, you know, mid-30s would be a good idea to start getting like a baseline of kind of where you are, or maybe early 30s. But I mean, the sad truth is that more and more people are getting sicker much younger, and you know, starting doing the testing earlier may be helpful. I've worked with some elite athletes and others using the testing, and I've actually been pretty surprised by how about what I found overall and toxicities, deficiencies, et cetera. So working on this stuff earlier can be beneficial, but certainly in adults is what I've mostly used the testing on, although I have pediatrician colleagues that do use it in kids as well.
Well, I can tell you right now, I'm getting this shit done. I didn't know anything about this, so I'm certainly, and actually watching a lot of your things the past, you know, few days that I've been enthralled in what you're doing, I'm going to do a much deeper dive on cellular and mitochondrial studies, because my knowledge is limited and I want to be able to convey this message too, but I want to know in detail. And I hope people watching see the importance of understanding the real aspects of our health that we need to understand. A lot of these basic things that are thrown out there are, I don't want to say they're insignificant, but they're not even close to what we need to really be understanding and learning. That's kind of what I was doing. I talked to a lot of people about cholesterol testing, and I tell them HDL, LDL, and triglycerides, fine. That's fine to test them. But the reality is that you need a comprehensive panel, your Lp little a, your ApoB, your particle sizes. That's where you find out if you got a real issue. You know,
well, like, I would even counter that to some degree and say, that's important, but what about inflammation in the system? What about mitochondrial dysfunction? Because
yes,
it's that's the fuel,
yeah,
that's the gasoline on the fire, right? You have elevated ApoB, doesn't matter to me. If your inflammatory markers are well controlled, if you have optimized mitochondrial function, it's not going to be an issue. So like they go together, right? So I think the key for us and the way we think about things at what's the foundational aspects of things that we're addressing? Optimizing for inflammation, optimizing for mitochondrial function, for gut health, immune system support, hormonal health, et cetera. And then, you know, then looking at those markers can be helpful. But if you're just looking at those markers and just treating them without looking at the inflammatory side of things, it's like going to a chamber without hyperbaric chamber without doing the leg work or the groundwork before going in.
That's the one I always test for, is the high sensitivity C-reactive protein and the inflammation testing, and look at all of that, because you're right, that tells pretty much everything. I mean, if you're screwed up there, you know something needs addressed, that there could be a lot of problems, and it should trigger you to get everything. In fact, that shouldn't even, you shouldn't be getting everything tested regardless, but that's one you definitely want to look at. Okay, so you've mentioned this several times, now I want to dig into it for my personal understanding, but for everybody's as well. So let's just break down methylene blue. Let's talk about what it is exactly, and who would be a prime candidate for it, and if there's multiple people for it, and then if there's any side effects with it or anything, any people that shouldn't look taking it.
Yeah, so methylene blue has been around a long time. I'm just going to cover something. Can you hear my daughter playing piano in the background? Is you can not hear that?
Nope, I don't hear it.
Sound doesn't sound at all? Okay, I just want to make sure. Okay, I just want to make sure before I got started on this that it wasn't too late, too loud. So, okay, I'll go back into it. I just wanted to just do that real quick before.
Good.
I was like, otherwise, like people were thinking I'm in like a piano like recital or something.
It's a good lead into the question.
Yeah. So methylene blue has been around a long time. It was first developed in the 1870s as a textile dye, actually. But in the 1890s, it was realized that it actually worked like a magic bullet. They called it that because you could give very high doses of it and it would kill pathogens in humans, but it would not harm normal cells. And that was kind of like the high pinnacle that they were trying to find at the time, because there really were no antimicrobials at the time at all. I mean, except for some natural things, but very, very few. And they had a very few things in their repertoire. So they started using methylene blue in 1897. It was FDA approved. It was the first drug registered with the FDA back in 1897. And it was actually treatment for malaria. But in the next 50 years or so after it was developed, it was used as an antimicrobial and one of the most significant and most potent that was available. So it was used in World War II. Pilots had to take it when they were in the Pacific and the jungles and fighting in the Japanese, et cetera. They were actually taking prophylactic methylene blue. There were stories about methylene blue and songs about it, because at higher doses for infection, it actually causes your urine to be blue. And so when you take methylene blue orally, it concentrates in your urine. You take it IV, it's the same thing, but it concentrates in your urine and you will urinate blues. That's something that it's a benign effect, but it is an effect, and it's surprising if you don't know it's going to happen. But when antimicrobials came on the scene in the 1950s, methylene blue became more out of favor. It just got out of favor because you had these newer, fancier antimicrobials, which were very good. You know, you had penicillin at the time and then others that were being developed in the 1950s. And so it had a long history from then. The first antipsychotics were derived from methylene blue, actually, because methylene blue also works on the neurotransmitter system, increasing serotonin, dopamine, and norepinephrine. And so the first antipsychotic in the 1950s was developed out of methylene blue itself. It was also used in laboratory staining in chemistry labs. And this is actually how I first learned about it when I was in college. And the interesting thing about where it stains the cell is, not surprisingly, in the mitochondria itself. And so it concentrates in the mitochondria. And so over the last several decades, there's been a lot of interest in what's actually happening with methylene blue in the mitochondria and why is it concentrating in there and what's happening. And so what we now know is that methylene blue at very low doses, you know, 4, 8, 16, 25 milligrams, is a fantastic mitochondrial optimizer. And it has a very cool effect, which is very unusual. And it's called the redox cycler. What that means is that it helps you make energy, it helps you make ATP, the energy currency. And it can do this even if some of the mitochondria isn't working very well, even if some of the complexes that are responsible for you being able to make energy in the mitochondria are not working as well as they're supposed to, you can still compensate for that using methylene blue. Now, on the other end of it, it's also working as an antioxidant. So it can actually pick up free radicals or oxidative stress. And so there's very few compounds out there that can do both. It help you can not only increase the amount of energy you're making, but also help with the detoxification capacity at the same time. So these low doses are extremely potent at working in the mitochondria. There's also some effects on how well methylene blue can be carried, how oxygen can be carried on red blood cells. Red blood cells, by the way, are the only cells in our body that do not have mitochondria. That's a fun fact. But the red blood cells carry oxygen, as we all know, and that methylene blue helps that become more efficient. And at the same time, methylene blue is working at this at the neurotransmitter level, helping improve your mood and your focus by increasing norepinephrine, serotonin, dopamine together. At these low doses, it could be fantastically potent as a mitochondrial optimizer, as a mood booster, as an energy enhancer. And then at higher doses, around a milligram per kilogram, a little bit more, definitely a little bit higher sometimes, a little bit more like 1 to 2 milligrams per kilogram, and sometimes a little bit lower than 1 milligram per kilogram, you get an anti-infective capacity to it. So it's an antiviral, it's an antifungal, it's an antibacterial. It's used in previously for urinary tract infections and other infections, but also still used that way in many countries around the world. And then even becoming more used again for malaria, because a lot of the drugs that we were using for it after the drugs were developed now no longer work against malaria because they're resistant to the organism, or the organism's resistance to the medications.
Is there any type of side effect or anything that's any person that shouldn't take it?
Yeah. So if you are pregnant or breastfeeding, you shouldn't take methylene blue. If you're taking SSRIs, SNRIs, or dopaminergic drugs, drugs that increase dopamine, you have to be really careful because methylene blue is already increasing those particular neurotransmitters. Now, it's not like absolutely you can't take methylene blue, but if you're going to try it, then I would use it in conjunction with working closely with a healthcare provider to kind of work with the dosing, making sure you're feeling okay, et cetera. I mean, the other thing that is, if you're a hypertensive, if you're on antihypertensive medications, especially like 3 or more antihypertensives, then you really got to think about using methylene blue very carefully, because it can raise blood pressure in some people a little bit, or some people more if they already have blood pressure issues. You can also get detoxification, like detox kinds of reactions using methylene blue, because you're enhancing energy and detox at the same time. But if you start off with really low dosing and you titrate it over time, like that's really where you can find that usually you're maximizing the benefits with minimizing the risks of having, you know, detox kinds of reactions, like Herzheimer type of reactions as well, or that kind of thing. And it's been amazing, Dylan. I mean, I've been involved now working with methylene blue for like 4.5 years, almost 5 years. And I've just been floored by the profound impact that it's had on so many people, like with inflammation, with pain, with brain fog, with concentration, with cardiac function, with liver detoxification. And in a lot of people that have tried almost everything and they're still feeling terrible. And then all of a sudden they start taking methylene blue and like their life can come back in a couple of days sometimes. I was just speaking to somebody that had a lot of issues with mold. She's a practitioner and she dealt with the mold. The mold was gone, but she still felt terrible. And she started methylene blue. A week later, she was back to work. And like she had been out of work for 2 years. And so this is not just like a one-off kind of story. We're hearing this all the time. The key with the dosing is to titrate it slowly and find the right dose for you. So oftentimes that starts with very, very low doses, like 4 milligrams, 8, 10, 16, 12, somewhere around there. And then slowly increasing the dose every 3 to 5 days until you're finding the benefit. But it's been fantastically effective with so many of my own personal patients and many stories that we've heard over the years as well.
Two-part question. How long can you run it? And is that something that you have to get a prescription for? Or how does one go about getting it?
So you can get it over the counter as well as a prescription. It's a kind of an interesting one like that because it's been around as long as it has been. So you can go buy it on Amazon, but I don't recommend doing that because the problem with methylene blue is that it can often be contaminated. Even the pharmaceutical grade can be contaminated with heavy metals like lead, mercury, cadmium, and arsenic. So you don't want that. So if you're going to get methylene blue, you have to make sure that you're getting the certificate of analysis from the company that's making it. But I would still not buy anything on Amazon because you don't know what you're getting. So at Trescriptions, our company, we have a couple different products with methylene blue in them. But we've had to throw out, honestly, like thousands of dollars worth of product in the past because it didn't meet our specs. And so it's really difficult. And as a clinician, I wanted to make sure there's four docs on the team, including me. And we wanted to make sure that every product that we made, we would want to use with our families, with our patients in clinical practice as well. So we've had to throw out a whole bunch over the years that didn't meet our spec. And so that's a big thing with methylene blue is making sure you're getting good quality stuff. And so we test every batch. We make sure that everything is up to exactly what our spec should be, which is, you know, very, very low or zero heavy metals. And, you know, this is something you should be asking, you know, the companies that you're looking at. It's difficult to dose in some ways too. Like a lot of the companies will make drops, like a little dropper of methylene blue that you have to kind of drop out and you don't know exactly how much you're getting. And we have tested a lot of the drops ourselves and the potency is not what's usually on the label. Oftentimes it's like 20 to 60% less than what they're actually telling you. And drops are also very messy. So we developed something called a troche, or T-R-O-C-H-E, which is a dissolvable lozenge that can go up between your upper cheek and gum, but it can also be swallowed as well. Methylene blue, the nice thing about it is that it's highly bioavailable, which means that almost 100% of it gets into the system, whether you get it in IV, which of course would be 100% bioavailable, or if you just take it in a troche or you swallow it. And so that's nice about it is you can just swallow it. Although if you want a blue mouth, you can put it up here and let it dissolve. What's nice about the blue mouth for some people though, is that it works faster this way. So troches are nice because if they dissolve in the mouth up between your upper cheek and gum, they're going to go in the system faster. They're going to get the effect faster. So if you have a lot of chronic brain fog and other issues, like mentally, like up here would potentially be a benefit, but you have to balance that with having potentially a blue mouth overall. But we have a lower strength called Just Blue. We have a higher strength called Tro Plus Blue. The higher strength is more for infection, for acute mitochondrial support, and the lower strength is more for mitochondrial optimization overall.
All right. So how is this something that you cycle on and off of, or do you just stay on it permanently, or how does that work?
Good question. So if you're coming in with a chronic complex medical illness, then oftentimes it's going to be something you want to take regularly for a period of time. It may be 2 weeks, it may be 4 weeks, it may be a couple months, maybe even longer in some people. And that's totally okay as long as you're monitoring things over the time, hopefully working with a practitioner. But very low doses are very, very safe when it comes down to it. We're talking about 4, 8, 16 milligrams. This is all very, very low dose and all very, very, very safe. If you're getting to be like above 50, especially above 100 milligrams a day of methylene blue, then that's more of an anti-infective dose. That's something that should be monitored over time with a practitioner if you're going to be on those kinds of doses. Now, if you're using it more for like endurance, for example, because we know that what methylene blue also can do is it can take place of oxygen and be just like oxygen and help you make more energy, even if you don't have as much oxygen around. So that what that means for like bodybuilder performance people is that you have your aerobic threshold will be longer. You will get to you will reach anaerobic threshold in a longer time. It will take you longer to get there. So you have more endurance capacity. And I've worked with a number of athletes, like doing ultramarathoners, doing hypoxic training, using methylene blue, 8-16 milligrams pre-hypoxic training, and then endurance or pre-endurance, and doing some fantastic, fantastic work with their times, with their overall performance. So, because it works on that energy production capacity. So in that capacity, you can use it sort of as ad hoc, right? As needed. Wow. You don't have to use it every day. Oftentimes, if you do need it more often, like say you need it like beginning 7 days a week because you have a chronic mitochondrial issue, what we try to do over time, at least clinically, is wean people down. So they're taking it maybe two or three times a week. If you're traveling a lot, if you're like on airplanes, like I am a lot, like then, you know, it's also great for jet lag because it protects you from being on an airplane at low oxygen levels up there with more radiation and more, you know, prone to getting infections and things like that. So we have really significant interest in helping people. Like if you're coming to visit me in Colorado, come take some methylene blue. It's going to help you. And also we have jet lag protocols and things like that on our website too.
So we're talking like it's going to increase your VO2 max then, correct? Is that what we're looking at?
Yeah, we're looking at that, at least anecdotally. We don't have any studies there, but we're looking at how we can do that and also help you maintain a heart rate at a level for longer, right? So that's what a lot of my patients will say to me is like, I won't exercise without methylene blue because I can keep my heart rate up for longer without getting tired.
Okay, understood. So essentially then I was on, obviously this is because I had looked this up after you and I talked and I saw an advertisement come up for prescriptions on my Facebook and I started laughing immediately.
Nice.
So let's say somebody wants to be a patient of yours or get methylene blue. Is that how they do it? Or what exactly is Trescriptions?
So Trescriptions was developed as the for-profit arm of our nonprofit, Health Optimization Medicine and Practice.
Okay.
It was the idea that we needed to help people right now while they're in the longer path to optimizing their health. And so methylene blue was one of the first compounds that we looked at because we saw such significant potential from a mitochondrial perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so we developed a number of products that have methylene blue in them that are direct to consumer. So you can go online at Trescriptions.com and buy Just Blue and Blue Canatine. So Just Blue is pure methylene blue, 16 milligram troches, can be broken up easily because the troches are breakable. You can break them up to quarter halves or fulls, and it can find your right dose and optimize it over time. We have another one called Blue Canatine, which is a combination of methylene blue with nicotine, caffeine, and CBD. This is like your biohacker special. This is your Adderall without the jitters. This is your focus, productivity, get shit done for about 3 to 5 hours without come down or crash. And this is actually the first product we came out with in February of 2020. So right just before the pandemic. And it's a fantastically effective product. It worked very, very well. If you're looking to have 3 to 5 hours of focus, this is the product to do it. And we've had, you know, clinicians do a really good job, including myself, be able to wean our patients off of ADHD meds, you know, slowly and carefully using this particular product as well. So, and I use them in combination. I use Blue Canatine with Just Blue together all the time. Blue Canatine in the morning because it gives you the stimulation, and then Just Blue, 60 milligrams of methylene blue in like the early afternoon to keep people going without giving them the stimulation and having them have a hard time going to bed in the evenings because of, you know, stimulants, et cetera. So Trescriptions was developed to fill the gap of the now, helping people right now while they're on the longer path to health optimization. And then we have a whole additional level of products called our Tro Plus line, which is for practitioners only. And this is for practitioners who want to sell our products either in their offices, or if they have a telemedicine practice, they can drop ship our products to their patients. We have one called Tro Plus Blue, which is our higher strength methylene blue, 50 milligrams, 5-0 strength. We have another one called Tro Plus Immune. We talked a little bit earlier about cordycepin, which is a fantastic anti-inflammatory coming from the cordyceps mushroom. So we have a Tro Plus Immune product as well for immune system optimization, decreasing inflammation, et cetera.
So those anti-inflammatories, those are way safer than like an NSAID, right? Like an ibuprofen or something that's damaging your liver and your kidneys.
The answer is yes. I mean, I don't want to say that you don't want to take those drugs if they've been prescribed to you or if they're necessary, but certainly the side effect profile of something like methylene blue or cordycepin is much, much less significant than NSAIDs in general. Yeah.
Looking, and that's a question for me personally, because I admittedly abused the shit out of ibuprofen for a year straight because I had the 800 milligram, prescription. And I was doing 3 a day for a year because my foot was busted and I run 10 miles a day and I was just trying to get through it. And then I realized, like, Dylan, like, what are you doing here? You know, like, well, it's for people like me that are going through that. And, you know, I tend to lean more towards peptides than medicine in general. Anyway, but yeah, that's a good option. So let me ask you this, in terms of the prescriptions, you know, company itself, is that something that if somebody goes there, buys methylene blue, how do they get you to monitor them, or a physician or practitioner to monitor them? Are they going there, they're just buying it and they're just doing it on their own?
Well, the good news is that the low doses are very easy to purchase and to monitor on your own over time. If you do have a significant medical issue, if you're on medications, if you're following with a practitioner already, it is a good idea, of course, to work with a clinician. We have a number of clinicians now that, you know, that are part of our network that are using Troscription's products. And so we have a resource map available for those practitioners if you're interested in working with a practitioner. But in essence, the lower doses can be titrated over time. And we have a lot of resources on our website to help people kind of understand what that looks like.
Yeah.
When it comes, we have blogs on methylene blue. We have lots of information. We have practitioners that are prescribing the higher dose as well, then working closely with their patients to kind of monitor them over time as well. But in essence, it's a very safe compound. And it could be used pretty much on your own as long as you're kind of, you know, making sure that you're understanding what risk you have of taking it, which is probably pretty low, but just in case, you know, looking at, are you on blood pressure medications? Are you on SSRIs and et cetera, et cetera. So if you're on prescribed medications, you really should be working with a healthcare practitioner and talking to them about anything else that you're bringing in to your body that you're going to be taking, because that's always an important thing.
You have time for one more question. I know we're getting to like, towards your time,
yeah.
I'll ask you one more thing. You and
sure.
I talked. We talked about the GABA system a little bit, and I was hoping that you could just maybe give a quick breakdown of what that is and the importance of it, because I know you seemed a little passionate about it. I'm curious, and I know a lot of people probably would be too. So if you could, that would be awesome.
Yeah, sure. So GABA is our primary inhibitory neurotransmitter. So it's the neurotransmitter in our brain that helps calm things down. It calms down neuron firing. This is very much associated with the increased tone of our parasympathetic nervous system, our nervous system that helps calm us down, rest, digest, recover, detoxify. That's what parasympathetic is all about. The sympathetic nervous system, on the other converse side, is our side that makes us feel more awake, more alert, ready to go, hustle, you know, hustle, bustle, move, go, don't stop, that kind of thing. And so the emphasis in American culture is on the sympathetic nervous system, right? You know, hustling, you know, pounding the pavement, like not sleeping, you know, getting shit done. And I've been definitely guilty of this in my own life in many times, as many of us that are trying to run 10 miles a day and taking 3 ibuprofen a day just to do it are doing. But
right.
what we forget is that the parasympathetic nervous system helps us heal. And if we cannot heal, we can't recover, we're not going to be able to perform at our best. And so optimizing the GABA system is extremely important. Many of us these days are GABA deficient, which means we don't have enough GABA in the system. If you don't have enough GABA in your brain, you're going to feel depressed. You can feel anxious. You're not going to sleep well. You're going to have mood instability. Like, you're just not going to feel good overall. So The key with the GABA system is to optimize it. And so how can we do that? There's a lot of different ways you can do it. The thing about GABA itself is that it's really just made in the brain.
Yeah.
And it's made from something called glutamate, which is our primary excitatory neurotransmitter. So there is the excitatory neurotransmitter glutamate, and then there is the inhibitory neurotransmitter GABA, and there's a balance between these two always. And so if you're too much on the glutamate side, you're going to feel edgy, you're going to feel headaches, you're going to feel like you're just kind of like off and hustling, you're just like not going to be able to feel relaxed. And if you have, and it's very rare to feel too much GABA, but too much GABA is like, I can't get off the couch. Like, it's like, I can't move. It's very, very unusual, unless you're taking things that are enhancing the GABA system. So the first thing to think about when you're enhancing or optimizing the GABA system is optimizing the conversion of that excitatory neurotransmitter glutamate to GABA itself. And the two cofactors that are required there are vitamin B6 and magnesium. You also have to think about stress and other things that can be depleting GABA, like if you're over-exercising, if you're overstressed, like that's going to deplete GABA over time too. Mineral deficiencies can do this. The problem with GABA supplementation is that GABA itself doesn't get across into the brain very easily. It doesn't get across the blood-brain barrier.
Okay.
If it does get across, it means that your brain is probably leaky, which means that it's leaking things in there that shouldn't get in there. That's not good, obviously. And that also that often corresponds with having a leaky gut, leaky GI system. So if you work on the GI system, you're going to work on the brain as well. And so if you have a severe infection, inflammation, severe trauma, or like, you know, it can be a physical or emotional trauma, like your gut can get leaky all of a sudden, your brain can get leaky all of a sudden, and then shit goes haywire. So if GABA supplements work for you, it likely means that your brain barrier is not doing what it's supposed to do. So there are ways to enhance GABA. Otherwise, you can't use GABA itself. You can use things like kava, which is a great one, or CBD or CBG, these cannabinoids that are non-psychoactive. So at Trescription, we have something called Trocom, which works on anxiety, stress relief, and tension by using kava, CBD, CBG, and something called nicotinyl GABA, which is a vitamin B attached to a GABA, which allows it to get across very easily because of the B3. And then in the brain, you get the GABA there and you get some B3. So the B3 is mildly activating. So you feel less anxious and less stressed, but you don't feel tired. So that's a nice kind of combination. What we've done at Trescriptions is combine something that binds to the GABA receptor at where GABA binds itself, and also where the GABA receptor site where GABA binds, and also a separate site where something else can bind, like kava, for example. And that combination increases the affinity of the GABA receptor to work well, and then at the same time, doesn't deplete GABA over time too. So that's what we have Trocom for. We also have something called Troz, which works on the GABA system by working on the combination, something that binds to the GABA site, something called agarin this time, which is actually from a psychedelic mushroom called the Amanita mushroom. But it's not psychedelic at low doses. It just comes from the mushroom that can cause psychedelic experiences, Santa Claus, reindeer flying, shamanistic rituals, and Christmas, Merry Christmas and Happy New Year. And so, but the agarin itself is a long-acting compound that works on the GABA receptor. And we have that included in combination with something called harnokiol from magnolia bark. That combination works on the GABA receptor, enhancing the capacity for GABA system to be increased. And so you get more relaxation, and it's long acting, so you get better sleep that way too. So the key with understanding GABA high level is that if you don't have a lot of it, you're going to be more anxious, you're going to be more stressed, you're going to be more depressed, and not be able to sleep. So you want to look at foundational biomarkers to support the GABA system. And you also want to think about supplementation that's going to support GABA, and not taking GABA supplements directly because they don't work. If they do, you likely have a leaky blood-brain barrier, which needs to be addressed.
So how would somebody find out if they're off there with their GABA? Is there testing that they can do, or?
There's no direct testing for GABA because GABA is only made in the brain primarily. And so you have to look at the precursors to GABA. So we talked about glutamate.
Yeah.
Glutamate comes from the amino acid glutamine. So you can test glutamine, like plasma amino acid levels of glutamine or urine, to kind of get a sense of glutamine levels. You can test vitamin B6 and magnesium, which are cofactors that are responsible for the conversion of glutamate to GABA. But in essence, it's a clinical diagnosis that not many practitioners are thinking about. They're thinking about neurotransmitters like dopamine and norepinephrine and serotonin. But we know that serotonin deficiency is not what causes depression, right? We know that it's not norepinephrine or dopamine deficiency that causes depression. So those drugs could be helpful, especially SSRIs in some people, but that's not really the reason why somebody's depressed, is because they're low serotonin, right? But they can be depressed because they have low GABA, actually. And so in my clinical practice, obviously I've done a lot of work in this world. It's one of the main things that I'm thinking about is like, no, let's not, you know, go directly to serotonergic or dopaminergic or norepinephrine. Let's go to the GABA system. Let's work on rest, relax, parasympathetic, supporting the GABA system. Breath work can work and support the GABA system, like yoga, mindfulness. Even exercise can help if it's done in short bursts, because exercise helps increase something called BDNF, which increases the amount of GABA as well. But there's also other drugs and supplements that can help support the GABA system too. There's lots of things like ashwagandha, and even progesterone can help as well. So there's lots of things here, but the key is to have it on your radar as a clinical practitioner. And also, if you're just somebody that has a hard time sleeping or anxious or depressed, like, think about the GABA system and think about using some supplementation that may support that to see if it works for you. And then you have a good sense that, yeah, this is what's going on. This is at least a part of what may be happening.
So it's certainly not a bad idea to go ahead and attempt to optimize this then at all, really.
For sure.
Sounds of it. I mean, anybody should and could go do it.
Yeah. I mean, you can do your own diagnostic testing on some level. If you take GABA supplements and they work, that could just mean that, you know, you got something going on there. Right. Now, and then you should go see a practitioner to check if you have a leaky gut.
Right.
But you also can try something like Trocom or, you know, Troz and say, hey, do these things help with my anxiety or with my stress or with my sleep? And then, okay, well, then there's something potentially going on with my GABA system here. So how can I not only just take these supplements when I need them, but how can I support the system holistically so I don't need these things all the time? And that would be fine for me. I'd rather for people be able to do this without supplementation, you know, quote unquote, naturally with behavior, with lifestyle, with diet. Like, that's ideal. I would ideally like not people to have to take the Trust Christians product for the long term, but they're there when you need them, that kind of thing.
Okay, cool. So let's finish up with this then. A couple things. If somebody wants to order on transcriptions, do they have to go like register as a patient? They can just get on there and order. How does that work for somebody?
Yeah, just go to transcriptions.com. Check it out. We have most of our products are direct to consumer, direct to you. We have a couple that are for practitioners only. So if you are a practitioner, you can go ahead and register with our practitioner portal in our page, and you can get access to wholesale pricing and drop shipping. If you like or interested in a Tro Plus product, but you're not a practitioner, then you can look at you can request a practitioner in your area. We can help set you up with somebody to potentially be able to prescribe those products to you as well. So yeah, those would be the main ways. And then we have a lot of information at transcriptions.com. Also on Instagram at transcriptions as well are places to go.
And do you take like telehealth patients, or do you do anything like that? Or is it just kind of on site where you're at?
So my consulting practice is a combination of many things, but the main aspects of it are hyperbaric oxygen therapy, health optimization medicine, and I focus on those two mostly. Sometimes I will consult with people on methylene blue if it integrates with those things, typically not on its own, along with the GABAergic stuff as well. I can sometimes work with people to kind of help them and kind of steer them in the right direction. But I've been working with patients all over the world for years, you know, just helping kind of guide in various ways, on clinical practice, on various types of protocols. And I work with clinicians and help set up hyperbaric facilities and integrate other technologies alongside hyperbaric therapy, creating protocols that way too.
Awesome. Man, I swear, dude, I could talk to you all day with all of this shit. I love it so much. I can't tell you how much I've gained just from this conversation and the things I've been watching. I still got a lot left to watch. So thank you for being generous with your time and for all of your insight and your intellect. It's really, really appreciated, not just from me, but I'm sure from everybody watching.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Yeah, I mean, if people are interested in learning more about me, like on Instagram, I'm at Dr. Scott Scherr, DrScottSherr. My hyperbaric consulting is at integrativehbot.com. And then my hyperbaric company is called One Base Health, the number one spelled out. And that's a company that I developed 3 or 4 years ago that's working on new technology and sensors and integrations with education and app-based technology to kind of bring hyperbaric therapy to the next level along with other tech as well.
Well, you've given me some homework to do tonight that I'll be working on. So, and I'm sure you have for others. So once again, I appreciate your time and your efforts and all that you do, because it is extremely valuable. And we need more people like you that are willing to take this step out and get onto a different realm and bring new things to light. So for me and from a lot of people, we need more people like you. And it's really appreciated, man. So thank you for that as well.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Dylan. This has been a pleasure.
Absolutely. All right, everybody. Well, stay tuned for plenty more to come. Dylan Jamelli and Dr. Scott Scherr signing off.